This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money, Amal Shaw, the big guy, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. Imagine my surprise. Two things. One, tomorrow it's a huge day for us here at VSiN as we drop our college football betting guide. And we got an effusive email from Bill AD today, our fearless leader, a.k.a. 007. And when Bill AD is effusive, he's into something, like he's into this college football guide, you know it's going to be good. That's number one. Number two is I'm getting set up for my shot here, Sharp Money, live from Los Angeles, and I look up at my screen and I saw Tim Murray always does a great job with Sean King, of course, right after us here on VSiN. And then to the left of Tim Murray was Don Johnson from Miami Vice. I mean, you got to be freaking kidding me. The local and resident playboy always has been at VSiN. Wes Reynolds, who's an encyclopedia. I don't know what he does in his free time. He watches wrestling. He's dating chicks. He knows everything about every team, but he came in, fellas, in a cream blazer today that made me weak at the knees. Big guy, Amal, thoughts on the attire?
I said to Wes, it's funny you brought it up. I said, Wes, I love the color. Looks extremely sharp. And then you go about saying the same thing. I'm telling you, it was good because now Wes actually believes me. If it was just me, I don't know if he would have believed it. But now that you've co-signed it, I think he believes it more.
I know this is a lot, big guy, and it's a lot for everybody downstairs. And I'm going to apologize in advance. But I pulled up a picture of Don Johnson, Miami Vice style, 80s. Amal and I, that was our era. If we could get a side-by-side of Wes Reynolds and Don Johnson today at some point over the next 3 hours, that would be an A+. Big guy, your thoughts?
I don't like it for Wes. I see, here's the thing. Wes is probably the sharpest guy in the network across the board because he literally bets everything. Every week, I feel like I open Twitter and it's people congratulating Wes Reynolds for hitting another 800-1 golf winner. He knows everything about sports. He knows a lot about music, too, by the way. I don't like when people can do everything. If he's going to start looking good and dressing good, I just think he needs to stay in his lane and leave it up to people like me to look good in front of the camera and just be the sharp guy.
Says the guy with the pimpin' Hawaiian shirt on today. Anyway, I wanted to give him a shout. If you do want to check the preview, they did a great job rolling through the Big Ten today. You can go to vsin.com to check out the video version. But as I mentioned, tomorrow, I got you, Amal. He's got something. He's got a joke. Watch this. 3, 2, 1. Go ahead.
I don't. I'm just sitting there thinking, you know, you mentioned about Wes. He does do a tremendous job. I've not encountered too many people in my life that know more about sports across the board than he does. And, you know, Dustin was sitting there hating on him a little bit, but I'm like, come on, he's the nicest guy there is. We actually are fortunate. We have a lot of great people that work here. Very nice. So
what happened to you? Hold on. I got to interrupt you. Yeah. What? I go away for a month and I come back and you like your coworkers? Like, this is a whole new Amal Shaw. I'd love to see it.
No. I'm going to tell you something that happened one day at the poker table that corrected in a conversation. I am as nice as they come.
Here we go.
I just don't. Once somebody is disrespectful, then it's game on. And I promise you, you're not going to win that game. It's like somebody said to me one time, they go, Amal, you go at people. I said, I never say a word to anybody. And somebody defended me. He goes, he never says anything to anybody unless someone says something to him first.
I got to say this about one thing about Wes, and then I want to give you credit from over the weekend, and we'll get the show going in earnest. Zachary Cohen, Greg Camarillo, Greg McElroy, Scott Spritzer. You think we're loaded today? We are. I want to say one more thing about Wes. While we all give him credit for knowing more about sports, and I've been in sports my whole entire life, he knows more than anybody I've ever met. I think it really just comes down to his encyclopedic brain. Because if you ask him about TV, if you ask him about music, if you ask him about any other hobby that he has, he just is a dude that remembers things. My memory is trifling. Like, we're going to go through the Pac-12. And by the way, the Pac-12 is all the way back. We're going to dive into the Pac-12 in a little bit. But I had to go back and be like, was it Utah? I know there was a 3-way split to get into the Pac-12 championship. Did they win the comp? My memory stinks.
I tell you what, in certain things, I have a great memory. In other things, at a certain stage of life, you just don't care as much. And last year's Pac-12 standings are one of them.
Okay. Big guy, how are we feeling today?
I'm in the same boat. I can remember, like, this conversation right now, if you ask me to remember it in an hour and a half from now, won't remember it. You ask me 6 months from now, won't remember it. But, like, 5 years from now, somehow I will remember it. I don't know how that makes sense, but in the moment, like, recently, I won't remember it. But somehow in my subconscious, it gets buried and pops up at random times.
Well, sometimes you struck an out, and sometimes you get a hit. You know what I'm saying? Look, he's bitter. He's bitter. Just 2 minutes into the show. Okay, we're going to do plenty. Good job by Amal Shaw. He gave us our prep for the night, which I like to see the big guy. USC, Utah, and Washington. I'm just going to say this. And the Pac-12, when we used to do our radio show, we were out in Los Angeles. We used to clown the Pac-12. The Pac-12 was a joke. It wouldn't be a capital S-H-O-C-K if one of these four end up in the final four. Or it, look, Oregon's legit, Utah's legit, USC's legit, and who am I forgetting? Washington's offense might be the best in the country. We'll get to the Pac-12 in a second, but Amal, I want to start here. The dust has settled on Major League Baseball's trade deadline, and I know we went over it, but I want to dig a little bit deeper into the AL West, because before the trade, the Rangers were a slight favorite in division. Woke up this morning, Astros minus 125, the Rangers plus 130. This is a team in the Astros. You jock them, and it's so apropos. Framber Valdez, who I know you like a lot, a no-no to say, we're back, baby. A 2-0 win over the Guardians. They're now just a half game back of the Rangers in division. But this is an Astros team. The pedigree is there. Six straight ALCS appearances. What concerns me is the attrition. Like, the Rangers has the Rangers been to the postseason since 2016? Like, this is a team that's rested as opposed to a team. If you think about it with the Astros, Altuve's played less than 35% of the games. You know, Yordan Alvarez had been banged up, but they're both healthy now. They're going to get Urquidy back. So this is a team that all of a sudden starting to build. You do wonder over the next 2 months into September, potentially into October, if the attrition will add up. And then the Rangers. The Rangers not only got Scherzer, but they added Jordan Montgomery from the Cards. They've got a plus 147 run differential. That's the best in the AL, just five behind the Braves. We all agree the Braves are the best team in baseball. Can they match up with the Astros? And do you agree on the flip with now the Astros being favored in division?
I don't think they should have gone away from being the favorite, because they had them in June and in July as being right there. You might have gotten the Rangers around a minus price at some point in time, Astros slight plus price. But after taking two out of three and surprising loss with Framber on the bump against the Texas Rangers, I still think this team was already in position. They got Yordan Alvarez back. You know, Tucker's been tremendous. You get Altuve's missed a ton of games. And then you add in Justin Verlander. And we know about his playoff hiccups along the way. But to me, Patrick, when you look at the combination of him and Framber Valdez, and yesterday Framber faces only 27, walks a guy in the top of the fifth inning. I think it was Steve Kwan, and gets a double play ball and gets out of it. This team is positioned exactly where they want to be. The experience, the talent is there. We've seen Tampa go into a tailspin. Toronto's got some question marks yesterday. Santander with a grand slam. Baltimore just continues to play great baseball. They get Jack Flaherty. I think it makes it a great acquisition for the Orioles. Would not be surprised at all if we wind up in an LCS that involves Houston and Baltimore.
That'd be ridiculous, honestly. Think about that. Just the upstart Orioles against a team that's been there, done that. But the attrition is real, big guy. Like, what I'm talking about, this is a team that's played a lot of baseball over the last 6 years with that core. I know you want to jump in, but just quickly, Amal would go, he would have taken the plus money with the Astros in division. So obviously he's going to lay the $1.25. Where are you with the Astros and Rangers?
Yeah, so we saw the attrition show its face with this offense struggling out of the gates for Houston this year. They just didn't look like the same team, and pieces like Jose Abreu just weren't hitting. The key right now for them, this ascension is happening, and the addition of Verlander is a perfect way to inject some more life into this as they're going upward. Jose Abreu got off to a horrible start, didn't hit a homer in the month of April, hit one in May. He had five in June, he had four in July. He is finally becoming the guy they thought they were acquiring to fill that role. Also, Yordan Alvarez missed a ton of time with injuries again. This offense goes as far as Yordan goes. If you look up Yordan Alvarez's stats in his career, his start to his career is on par with like David Ortiz's runs. That is how consistent and how powerful Alvarez has been at the beginning of his career. I think adding Verlander is huge. Adding Kendall Graveman to the bullpen is huge for them. Here's why. Those two guys have experience in this organization. It's not strangers that have to get acclimated. It's people who understand the way down there. They're just going right back to where they used to be, teammates that they already knew. The chemistry will stay the same, if not get better, because you're bringing those guys in. I will say this, though. The Texas Rangers are a team that I bought in early. I got them at plus 550 to win the AL West.
Here he goes. We knew the flex was coming.
I have some concerns right now, despite adding Max Scherzer, despite adding Jordan Montgomery. Here's why. Nate Evaldi's on the IL. That guy's been hurt a lot in his career. I don't want to just assume he's going to come back and be the Cy Young candidate he was prior to the injury. They're losing Jonah Heim, an all-star catcher, drives in 70 runs behind the plate, 14 homers, and they're replacing him with Austin Hedges as a defensive catcher, as a backup. And Mitch Garver's a guy who popped a few years ago from Minnesota. He'll probably take over the everyday duties. But Corey Seager's hurt again. Like, I am very concerned about that. I think this team has a lot of depth. I love their lineup. I love the roster construction. I still don't love the bullpen, even though they added Aroldis Chapman. So I think you have good points about Houston here coming out of the West. Because of my bet, I'm going to side with my guys, the Rangers, though.
But here's, and Amal, I think you can back me up on this. Big guy, when you have a futures ticket on every team in every sport, you can't flex anymore. Because every time we talk about a team, you're like, oh, let me look in my back pocket.
Well, in the AL West, I have a ticket on everyone but the Astros. I faded everyone in the West.
I was going to say, I know. I think the injuries are going to be a concern. I really do. Dude, we got 2 more months, and then we start talking about September into October baseball. I think I would lean with the $1.25, but it's going to be interesting to see if the Astros can stay healthy. And by the way, the Astros got the better of the two. Verlander's better than Scherzer right now.
There's no question.
Agree?
No, completely agree. Real quick on the schedules, though. If you can take the Rangers right now, plus money, take it. Because in about 2 weeks, I think the odds are going to change. They've got an easy schedule. And then on the back end of the season, the Astros' schedule gets easier.
Your dad and mom were like, should we name him Amal Shaw or Schedule Shaw? They went with Amal. When we come back, I got one question about the Dodgers. And then the Pac-12 is legit this year. We're diving in.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money, VSIN, the sports betting network. Across the network, it's been fun. This whole week, you're getting each hour, you're getting college football, because tomorrow we drop our college football betting guide. It's awesome. Wait till you see it. Go to VSIN.com/subscribe to sign up. I'm Patrick Maher. Of course, Amal Shaw, the big guy, Dustin Sweetelson. We're going to welcome in our teammate, Zachary Cohn, who does a great job. He wrote up the Heisman Trophy preview and the college football betting guide, does a great job. We'll get to that coming up in just a bit. We brought Zachary specifically to talk about the SEC. We'll get into Ole Miss and Auburn. He has a couple plays there. But we just happened to start talking about Utah. And I threw the 8.5 number, which is plus money, +120, +125, somewhere in that range on Utah to go over that 8.5. We'll start with you, Amal Shaw. I saw your eyes light up as soon as I said that 8.5 number on Utah.
Well, I think the number is a little bit low. You know, we were talking about the schedule. It's challenging. You listed their road games at Baylor the second week of the season. Then you got obviously UCLA.
At Washington, at USC, yeah. At Oregon State. I mean, that's tough.
They are definitely tough when you look at the games, but I'm going to tell you, the fact that this team likes to run the football, play defense. Remember, they were number 2 in Pac-12 play last year against the run. They weren't great against the pass, and they do lose Clark Phillips from that secondary. But still, 7 starters to 8 starters back on defense. I think this team is not going to skip a beat. They're going to be effective. We talked about whether Cam Rising comes back. And Zach, to me, that's going to be part of the key for this team. Experienced quarterback, talented, mobile, can do a lot of different things. But I really like what this team is in the trenches.
And Zach has this team in the college football playoff. You mentioned Clark Phillips out, but they did get a transfer from Ole Miss, and that is Miles Battle to play cornerback. So let's start with you, Zachary. You love this Utah team.
I do. And yeah, Cam Rising is a guy. He's coming off a torn ACL. That'll kind of determine the season right away. You're going to know right off the bat whether or not they win some of those early season games based on whether Rising's back and ready in week one. But if he is, I love him. I think that he's a guy that we don't talk about him enough as, you know, one of the top quarterbacks in college football, but he's one that he'll outplay someone that's better than him in a big game. He's just an absolute gamer. And I really think he's, you know, the ultimate winner. But yeah, they have one of the best teams in the country in terms of the trenches, defensive line, offensive line. I think that their secondary will be a bit better this year. So I think that the schedule is really tough for Utah. Like, it's hard to even overstate that. But I think that they're going to be able to find a way to navigate through it. And I think that the Pac-12 is going to be good enough this year that even if they lose a game or two, as long as they win that Pac-12 championship, they can get into the playoff.
Amal Shah, they open August 31st. Remember, they went to Florida with the home-and-home and lost. That was a rough way to start a season with high expectations for Utah last year. But this is an offense in Utah. It's the run game and tight ends. So if Rising's good to go off that ACL, you can kind of rely on Jackson, the quarterback turned running back, who was awesome tail end of the season last year. Devon Vale, also a very good wide receiver. Keithy, you and I were talking about the tight end who missed last year. When he was playing with Kincaid, he was the better wide receiver. Like, he is, maybe he's undersized, the tight end there at Utah, as far as a pro, but he's a great college tight end, Amal.
You mentioned Keithy. Forget about what he projects to at the next level. Dalton Kincaid, a first-round pick by the Buffalo Bills. More importantly, what you mentioned with this team and what they're capable of doing, that's what's crucial. They're so effective defensively. And here's another stat that is not going to come as much of a surprise to anybody. Number one in time of possession last year with 33 minutes a game. This is what they do. And this is how they slowed down USC in the second half, took the football away. And then you saw the adjustments in the Pac-12 championship game. They dominated the Trojans in that game, put Caleb Williams on his heels, and that really made it a challenge. I agree with Zachary. I think this team's got a great chance. And Zach also made a great point, which was, I think the Pac-12 can absorb a loss and still get in the playoff this year. With the teams we've talked about, and I didn't include Oregon because I don't believe in their defense, but these four teams, at 11-1 and winning the Pac-12 will be in the college football playoff.
Mr. Cohen, anything to add?
Yeah, I think Oregon State's another
Utah
one that could have a...
Oh, go for it, Zach.
Now, I say Oregon State's another team that's just really good in this conference. I think that I put, you know, DJ Uiagalelei as a dark horse Heisman candidate. They're a team that's really good on both sides of the ball. I think Jonathan Smith is one of the best coaches in the country. So that's another one that I just think we leave them out a little bit amongst the elite in this conference. But I do think, yeah, we were just talking about the Pac-12 is really good conference this year.
Go ahead.
Real quick on Oregon State, I like this team a lot. I'm not as high on DJ Uiagalelei as you might be, Zach, but you mentioned Jonathan Smith, tremendous coach. I will push back on the Heisman voting on DJ Uiagalelei. Oregon State's had one Heisman winner, 1962, Terry Baker. I just don't see this team being able to get enough national coverage. And by the way, by the time we get to the end of the regular season, Oregon might be a team without a conference come the 2024 season.
Very well put. Zachary Cohen does a great job joining us here, Sharp Money. He's got a great write-up, the Heisman Trophy preview in the College Football Betting Guide that drops tomorrow. Also went over the SEC. I'm sure, Zachary, you've seen our buddy Lane Kiffin is in Italy and he's tweeting his trip. I'm Dustin, I know you saw it too, but he's tweeting like literally every minute about his trip in Italy. He's got a good team here. Ole Miss, let's start there. You're going over the 7.5.
Yeah, I just think that Kiffin's done nothing but win since get to Ole Miss. And they just brought in Pete Golding, the defensive coordinator at Alabama. I think he'll shore up that defense, which has been, you know, their weakness over the last couple of years. And I just don't see their offense having any trouble scoring. I think that Kiffin has proven he can score with anybody that he has, whether that's going to be Dart in his second year in the offense or Spencer Sanders, who's a really good dual threat transfer for them. Then they also have the best running back in the conference in Quinshon Judkins. So I just think that this is a team that's being slept on a bit. I don't see any reason to believe that they're going to win, you know, seven or fewer games.
By the way, Patrick, I love the point he made about this offense, and I agree with you going over seven games there. Love Zachary Franklin on the perimeter and Trey Harris as well. But I tell you what, I think Spencer Sanders is going to end up starting the Oklahoma State transfer because of his mobility with his legs. I think he gives Lane Kiffin's offense more options the way he likes to utilize the quarterback than with Jackson Dart potentially starting.
Very good. Next up with Mr. Cohen here, of course, Alabama and Georgia. When you're talking SEC, those are the two teams that jump out. But I want to ask you about Auburn because you're going over the 6.5 on the Plains.
Auburn's total, I think it's a little bit too low. I think that's a team that really was impacted by how poorly a job Brian Harsin did both on and off the field. I think you bring in Hugh Freeze, one of my favorite head coaches in the country, maybe not for his off-field antics, but he's just a really good football coach. I think that he gets 17 starters back, you know, from last year. Brought in Peyton Thorne as a good quarterback who's, I just think, going to do a really good job of running his offense. We saw what he did 2 years ago when he played with a good running back in Kenneth Walker. He's going to have that again in Auburn. I just think that there's a lot of talent on this team that wasn't used correctly last year, but it will be immediately with Freeze.
Amal, I will just one correction. I will say Brian Harsin, who was terrible as a head coach there at Auburn, had no ties where it's important to have ties to the school, although Hugh Freeze did coach in the SEC. I will correct Zachary on one thing. If you believe the rumors, Harsin did very well off the field. You see what I'm saying there? Go ahead and just Google it just quickly. I'll say this, and Amal, you can check me. Hugh Freeze will win a national championship at Auburn.
Well, I'll tell you why. I'm not going to necessarily sign off on that, but look, he's a great coach. Sometimes we do this in college basketball. If you win a national title, you're a great coach. If you don't, I think Hugh Freeze is going to have this team very, very competitive. And I'll tell you what, this is a big, big year for Alabama because Auburn just got a five-star recruit at wide receiver that was committed previously to Alabama, Hugh Freeze. I don't know if there was McDonald's money or what was involved. Regardless, he's going down on the plains and going to be playing at Jordan-Hare. And that's the difference. He can coach offense. We know what he's been able to do in the past, whether it's at Ole Miss or at Liberty. I agree with you, Patrick. I think he's a tremendous coach. Zachary agrees. I think all three of us are universal in saying this guy can coach offense. Guys, I don't like Peyton Thorne, the Michigan State transfer. Not that Robbie Ashford is a better quarterback, but he gives you a little bit more mobility. It'll be interesting to see what they do at the quarterback position in terms of getting consistency there. Jarquez Hunter, let's see how effective he can be running the ball, because I think the running game is going to need to be effective for this team early in the season.
I'm just laughing because Gene Chizik was an out-and-out buster, and he won at Auburn. Hugh Freeze will win at Auburn. It was hilarious when Chizik got hired there.
He had the laptop thief, Cam Newton, and I'm going to tell you, that makes a difference.
He was pretty good.
Yeah.
Cam Newton, newsflash, pretty good college football quarterback. Before we say goodbye, 2 minutes here, Zachary. Let's go best value in the Heisman market.
I still think it's Jordan Travis. I think I had it at 12-1. I believe when I started writing up the guide, I think it's up to 14-1 now. I just think that of the players that are the chalkier options, he's by far the best one. I think he's got a loaded group of wide receivers, a much better offensive line than what we've grown used to at Florida State. And then you add in the fact that he's probably one of the best running quarterbacks in the country. That's the type of thing that Heisman, lives on. You want a guy that can run the football, make big plays. I think he'll do that. And I think he'll be doing it for a Seminoles team that I think is going to win at least 10 games and be a threat to make the college football playoff.
Patrick, I want to go one step further. Florida State's going to be in the college football playoff. When you look at the trio with this team offensively, Johnny Wilson at 6'7", 235, 240 pounds, absolute nightmare matchup on the perimeter. You add in Keon Coleman, who's a potential all-league wide receiver transferring from Michigan State. And then, of course, you mentioned Jordan Travis being a dual threat. And Trey Benson is an all-league type of running back. Him or Will Shipley are going to be the first team running back in the ACC, just depending on whose team wins that game in Death Valley. I love the Seminoles team. Dustin made a great point. He said he wasn't sure about Mike Norvell a year ago. I tend to agree. The Florida State Seminoles, unlike Texas, they are back.
Are you in agreement? Just 30 seconds, Zachary. Are you as high on Florida State as Amal Shaw is?
Yeah, I had Florida State as one of my four college football playoff teams. That's a spoiler alert for the guide. But yeah, I'm really high on them. I think Norvell's a great coach, and I think that the talent that he has on this roster is ridiculous.
Zachary Cohen does a great job. You just heard one of his final four teams. You can go check out the guide tomorrow. It drops VSiN.com/subscribe to get the other three. Also, I got a chance to read it today, a tremendous Heisman Trophy preview from Zachary. Zachary, thank you, buddy. Appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, there you go, Zachary Cohen. We've got Greg Camarillo at the bottom of the hour and Greg McElroy coming up. But next, Dustin Sweetelson, the big guy's got some splaining to do.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, download the DraftKings app now. If you're a new customer, bet $5, get $150 in bonuses instantly. The way to do it, use the promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N. Again, DraftKings Sportsbook, $5 for new customers to get $150 in bonuses instantly. We got you back here. Dustin Sweetelson has settled down. I won't ask about the Mets again. That was my B. Amal Shaw, Patrick Maher, Sharp Money, VSIN. We were talking about the Pac-12, and the Pac-12 is back, which is interesting because they're about to tear it apart, and we're going to bring in the great Greg Camarillo, of course, former Stanford wide receiver, Pac-12 network analyst, at Catch Camarillo on Twitter. First off, Greg, thank you, buddy. It's great to see you. And These are exciting times for a league that's taken a lot of shrapnel over the last, I don't know, decade or so. The Pac-12 is back, baby.
Yeah, I mean, at least for the time being. And so, you know, I've been following all the news of the conference realignment, all the media rights deals, and just trying to figure out what's happening with the Pac-12. But also diving into the football teams, because for the Pac-12, I mean, UCLA, USC, it's still the Pac-12 right now. And there are some good football teams. And I think that, you know, the years of not having a championship contender that have led to this conference realignment might drastically change after this season. Cause they, you know, between USC, UCLA, Washington, Oregon, Pac-12 has some dogs, and I'm eager to see how the season goes.
You played at Stanford. I have to ask you about the program right now. Where do you see them going? What's the situation right now? I mean, this is a team that just fell off a cliff, it seems like.
Yeah. The good news is I don't think they're going down any further because they're pretty much at the bottom. It's just, you know, as an alum, we've been through, you know, the ups and downs of Stanford football. And it used to be a program where it was just like, you know, every couple of years you make a bowl, all good. And then Harbaugh and Shaw took the program to new heights where it was like you were actual a BCS contender. And that now has gone the opposite direction. And it's hard to maintain that recruiting level, that talent level at Stanford because of academic restrictions, because they have been behind in an NIL game, because the transfer portal and Stanford don't really go hand in hand. Unfortunately, they're going to have a rough year. And you know, those odds say it all right there. They, I think, have the least amount of returning snaps in all of Division I football or all of FBS football. They're lacking talent. You know, they have a new coach. They have a new system. No one's expecting much from them this year. And that's really the only thing they've got going is that, you know, we've got new guys, no expectations. You might be able to sneak up on some folks.
Yeah, it's going to be an uphill battle. Greg Camarillo joining us, as you mentioned, as an alum of Stanford. You mentioned Harbaugh and then David Shaw, who did an amazing job there. Troy Taylor, can you tell us something about the new coach? He had a successful stint at Sacramento State. He did a great job, but this is a big step up for the new coach there at Stanford as well.
Yeah, so I got a chance to meet with Troy Taylor and his staff covering their spring game. And there's a lot of excitement. You know, after, oh man, I think it was 12 years of David Shaw. You know, I might be off on that. There's new energy, you know, and a lot of respect for David Shaw for climbing the program so high and then knowing when it was time to tap out and say, you know what, done what I can do. It was an amazing ride. Time for some new blood in here. So Troy Taylor's offense, it worked at a high school level. It worked at the lower level of colleges. And now it's time to see if it can work at the Pac-12 level, at a Power 5 level. And what he describes it as, it's a hybrid spread offense. And so he's got flexibility with receivers, flexibility with quarterbacks. He doesn't describe it as your standard route read to reading space. They're reading defenders and where the space is available, which as a former receiver, you know, we're talking about throwing the ball. We're talking about getting to adapt. We're talking about a fast-paced offense that'll go no huddle. So hurry up. They'll go no huddle, but slow it down and call plays just from the sideline. And then they'll go traditional huddle. So to be able to do so many different things on offense and be able to adjust and run my route based on the space the defense is giving, it sounds awesome. And I hope that it can work. It's proven that it can work in the past. At Sacramento State, he had a lot of success. Folsom High School, he had a lot of success. It's the test is, can this work at Stanford with the tools they have? Can it work at the Pac-12 level? You know, at worst, we get to see some excitement in a new offense. They got Hawaii first up, and it'll be an immediate test.
All right. Good job, Greg. I like the positive spin. Amal, I'll let you ask your question, but just quickly, over at DraftKings, Stanford's win total set for the regular season at 3, Mr. Shaw.
Yeah, so we've established Greg doesn't believe Troy Taylor and company are going to win the league in the first year.
Yes.
who do you think is probably a team you would select? I mean, there's several good options here, but give me an argument for which team you would pick to win the league this year.
All right, so, I mean, SC is clearly the one that, you know, you've got a returning Heisman winner. You've got all kind of weapons. So I'm going to just pass on them because I want to think outside the box. I don't want to go straight with SC. And I'm looking at Washington. I'm going to drop a couple spots lower because of Michael Penix Jr. returning. And he was lighting up the skies last year. And then he's got his strong receiving core that comes with him. And so not only do you have this dynamic quarterback, you've got two of the best receivers in the Pac-12 that are going to be with him. And that to me is going to cause more surprises than SC. We know SC is outstanding. And if you look at their SC schedule, they like shouldn't even have a challenge until six yeah. games in. So, but Washington, I like them to sneak up on folks and push for a Pac-12 title.
We like it, Greg, because I'm taking a look right now. Washington is your third betting favorite to win the conference at plus 320. You mentioned Penix Jr. Those wide receivers are legit. And speaking of one, you were one. Let me ask you about an injury. Okay, 7 years in the NFL, not just Stanford for you, Greg. But how about Cam Rising? Cameron Rising at Utah. What was it? The Rose Bowl in January, he popped his ACL and he's going to be ready to go at the end of August. Is this something, do you consider that viable?
Yeah. So I tore an ACL. Oh man. I want to say either had surgery or tore my ACL December 9th or 10th of a season. And then came back in camp that following end of July and August. And now as a wide receiver, that's more difficult because you need to be more explosive. And I'm not saying I pulled off something more difficult. I'm just saying it'll be an easier chance getting back on the field because we're looking at quarterback drops. We're looking at planting and throwing as opposed to full speed planting, turning the other way. So I think he can be back to the level. He will not be this. He will not have the same explosiveness. He was very crafty and just coming up with plays last year when the team needed something, he handled business. So he's going to have to lean on being more of a traditional quarterback to get rolling. But by the time September comes around, by the time October comes around, he'll feel good. He won't have the same explosion, but he'll feel good. And this is the team's leader. Like, he is the personality of their team. So even if he's not 100%, he needs to be out there. They also have a strong chance at pushing for another title. And a lot of that's because of Cam Rising.
Greg, I disagree with you. I think you did pull something off that Cam didn't. You got into Stanford. I mean, let's be real here. Very few people are. When you look at this league, I think the experience, when you look at USC with Williams, Bo Nix at Oregon, Penix, as you mentioned, at Washington, Cam Rising at Utah. Tell me about the importance of having that experienced quarterback in college football and what it can mean to a team early on.
Yeah, and a lot of that is, the leadership. So in college, your leadership is huge because you're not looking at all pros that have the same pro mentality. You're looking at college guys where you need to build that mentality. And if your quarterback is an experienced guy that is a leader, hopefully a locker room leader, not just a leader on the field, that brings everybody else along with it. And also there's so much less time in college to learn plays, to learn a playbook, to build that chemistry. In the pros, you have all offseason. You know, there's rules as to when you can be in the facility and not, but you have pretty much the whole time. You can gather, learn plays, build chemistry, go out together. In college, these guys have school, they have summer school. It's way more important to have that chemistry established, to have a quarterback that knows the playbook in and out established right away. And if you look at those Pac-12 odds of who could win, all of them have strong returning quarterbacks. And then the next one is Oregon State, who has a Clemson transfer quarterback, DJ. Oh man, I practice saying his name.
You could do it. You can do
DJ,
it.
The Oregon State quarterback, Ualele, I believe.
You nailed it. You nailed it.
Yeah, I got to work on that. I'll get better at that. But they have these veteran quarterbacks, and there's a reason why they're at the top of the list, because that veteran quarterback means so much.
See, Patrick, I knew he made a mistake going to Stanford, because if he went to an SEC school, he would never have mentioned school. Don't have to go.
He had a choice. He could have gone to Harvard. He could have gone to Stanford. It kind of looks like my resume coming out of high school. Anyway, Greg Camarillo, of course, former standout, not just Stanford, but the NFL, Pac-12 network analyst at Catch Camarillo on Twitter. We're going to talk to you during the season. Look forward to it, Greg. Thank you so much.
Right. Appreciate you, fellas.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is that dude's smart. He's a quick dude. Good athlete as well. He mentioned the ACL. Great point by him as far as those quick cuts. You know, it's different for a running back and a quarterback. However, with Rising, I mean, that is an offense built around the run, and he's a part of that, and throwing to the tight end, as we mentioned. So that's an early – it's a tough schedule to start for Utah, so he's going to have to be ready to go come the end of the month.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. You mentioned the road game against Baylor. I think they'll be okay whether he goes or not in that first game against Florida.
Greg McElroy does a hell of a job. He's talking local in Tuscaloosa now. Also ESPN, he joins us next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, we got a national champ coming up, a dude that wakes up super early. So looking forward to Greg McElroy. But first, who will win the Heisman Trophy? Who will be in the college football playoff, the Final Four? Which teams will surprise and which teams will disappoint? All of those questions and more can be answered by reading the 2023 VSIN College Football Betting Guide, detailed team previews, picks, best bets from our writers, hosts, and DraftKings personalities, all just a few clicks away. Become a VSIN Pro today. Remember, it's dropping tomorrow. There's so much information with the transfer portal, new head coaches. Make sure you check it out. VSIN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe to grab the guide. Okay, Greg McElroy. I mentioned he gets up early. Mac and Cube on Jocks 94.5, of course, the former Alabama quarterback at Greg McElroy on Twitter. Also check out the podcast, of course, ESPN. Greg, first off, thank you. And I'll fanboy out a little bit because I was a huge fan of yours when you were on for years on Sirius XM. So let me ask you the difference. You've been asked this a million times, but the difference in doing, you know, what you would consider now to be local radio along with ESPN and then on the Sirius platform, which was national. How would you kind of contrast the two?
Yeah, it's funny with where local's gone. It's become more national with apps and streaming services and video elements to the show. So, I always thought, national and local, but I actually think that we've kind of changed a little bit where niche programming is really beneficial. Like you guys do that, right? I actually think, Brent and I might have actually had this discussion at some point, like 8 or 9 years ago, where you want to be kind of niche because you want your audience to care about what it is you're doing. I think it's why podcasts have grown, your platform at VSIN has grown. So I think local and national both have a lot of benefits, but I've really enjoyed going local and really covering and diving in deep on college football daily.
Greg, give us a pulse of what it's like in the state of Alabama. You're based in Birmingham. You played for Alabama. You won a national championship. Your co-host Cole Kublik played at Auburn. I mean, people who don't realize the Iron Bowl is 365 days a year. Just take us into what the intensity is like within that state, and especially with the Crimson Tide being so dominant for the last 15 years.
Well, and Auburn has a little momentum, too. Yeah. So with what Hugh Freeze has done and some of the recruiting progress he's made, I mean, just in the last week, he's flipped a couple of high-profile recruits from Georgia, and then he had a high-profile flip from Alabama. So I think right now, the rivalry has obviously been a little one-sided in recent years. But when I was in high school, I mean, Auburn was on the heels of a 6-game winning streak against Alabama. So, that was from 03 to probably to 02 all the way through 2007. So it was a kind of a weird rivalry that went back and forth. But, man, it's intense. Like, everybody, Michigan, Ohio State, and I lived in Cincinnati for a little bit, played a year with the Bengals. Ohio State and Michigan's massive. I'm not trying to say it's not. Like, the schools are huge. In Alabama, you don't get the option of being a Michigan State fan. Like, you pick one or the other, and whatever one you pick is perfectly fine. If you pick neither, they both hate you. But basically, it's one of the – they ask you what your name is, they ask you where you're from, and they ask you who you pull for. It's – I'm not – and you think I'm kidding. That is God's honest truth with the importance of the rivalry and the sport here in the state.
Greg McElroy, national champ, Mac and Cube, 94.5 Jocks, of course, Always College Football is the podcast over at ESPN. We were having a little fun before he came on. Let's talk about Auburn. Look, if Gene Chizik did work on the Plains, I think Hugh Freeze is very polarizing, but he's going to get it done there. Like, give me 6.5 to the number this year. You know what that means. 7 wins. If you go over, you're a winner. If I told you 6.5 is the win total on Auburn, where are you going, Greg?
Well, I think it's a really well set line. I've seen it 7 in some places. If it was 7, that's probably the number. And you go through the schedule, I think it's manageable. The SEC West is a gauntlet this year, and really every game for Auburn is losable. There are a few that are winnable. There are a couple that are not. For instance, Georgia, probably not winnable in year 1,
But most of the others have a pretty good chance of being highly competitive. But where do you see them stacking up right now? Now, the roster turnover has been pretty remarkable. If you told me gun to head right now, Greg, 6.5, you had to pick a side, I'm saying under. But I think it's going to be right there with a swing game potential basically hinging on an upset. I mean, I think Ole Miss is ahead of them in their program development. Mississippi State brings back a lot of personnel, even though they're changing their identity a little bit. Arkansas brings back some weapons but have some concerns on defense. A&M, I think, bounces back in a big way this year. I really like the over there, even though that number's an 8.5. LSU has as good a roster as anybody. Alabama, I think people are underselling just their demise in general. So I think if you had Auburn 7th in the SEC West, it would be okay. I still think all 7 are going bowling. So that means you're sitting there on the fence in the final week of the season in the Iron Bowl hoping for an upset, and that should give you that over ticket.
You mentioned the Crimson Tide, Jalen Milroe or Ty Simpson. Who do you believe ends up the starter there? Alabama's season win total set at 10.5, depending on where you get it. I don't see a scenario where this team loses 3 games. Is it at worst 10-2 this year?
I think that's the absolute floor. And part of it is just where the games are played. You have LSU in your backyard. Yes, you go to Texas A&M. That will be a really difficult game. You have Texas, but that game's at home. So most of the difficult games or the more difficult games will actually be in Tuscaloosa. Road trip to Auburn, tough spot naturally. But you also have to go to Mississippi State, which is a sneaky, difficult setup game. Tennessee comes to you. So I think Alabama, I have a really hard time seeing them going under 10. I mean, even at 10.5, I take the over. I think the juice in the under, the narrative about the program being in a spiral on the way down, I disagree with. There's a really young nucleus that played a lot last year that didn't quite know how to get over the hump and didn't quite know how to do things the way they're supposed to be done all the time. On the field, that is, as far as just paying attention to the details and preparation, they're pretty excited about their team. Of course, a lot of it will hinge on quarterback play. And Ty Simpson, as of right now, is the favorite to be the opening day starter in Vegas. Not a lot of people were talking about him a couple weeks ago. I was asked who I thought it was going to be. I'm not saying I moved the market by any stretch. I don't know. But I felt redeemed when I saw the numbers come out the next week, and people said Ty Simpson +105, Jalen Milroe +300, and Ty Buckner somewhere around +150 or so. So I was relieved that Vegas saw it the way I saw it, to be honest with you, because I felt like I had kind of taken a chance there because he was kind of getting lost in the shuffle. But I expect them to move more to a run-first style of attack. They control the line of scrimmage and have that game manager quarterback that they had early in the Saban tenure, more so than what we've seen probably the last couple of years where it's been more quarterback-centric. So I think they're going to be really good. I really do. And I think people are really underselling them as it relates to the college football pecking order, because we're still talking about a team that's 1-1 against Georgia in the last 2 years. That's a pretty good record against the defending 2-time national champion.
Greg McElroy casually spitting out market numbers. He's going to get a job here at VSiN if we're not careful. Steve Spurrier, you know what he did in Columbia. There should be books written about it. I mean, it's unbelievable what he did there in South Carolina. Shane Beamer, can I get your thoughts? I went to school there. That's why I'm asking you selfishly. Can you give me your thoughts on Shane Beamer? 8 wins last year. They're set at 6.5 this year. Kind of your thoughts on Beamer and then overall South Carolina this year.
The number scares me at 6.5, doesn't it? You, I mean, you win 8 last
year, does.
And you know, it's kind of like, ooh, what do they know, right? And they do need some guys to emerge on defense. There's a lot of momentum that's been created on the recruiting trail. Actually, just yesterday, they landed a 5-star prospect, yep. So they're doing some good things, and there is some momentum off the field. But the inconsistencies of last year's team remain. Now, I'm cautiously optimistic they'll be better. But I also think there are some really challenging games in the schedule. I mean, can you get Georgia? I don't see that one as likely. Kentucky, can you handle Tennessee the way you handled them last year? Are you going to get Clemson the way you got them last year? I mean, that's 4 teams right now that are ahead of South Carolina, not to mention a Missouri team that beat them up badly last year. And people are kind of sleeping, I think, on Mizzou a little bit, too. So it's a difficult number for me to gauge. I would stay away from South Carolina, but I am optimistic about what's coming for Shane Beamer here in the future, because it does feel like a program on the rise.
Greg, we know you get up early. We appreciate you. It's annoying how good you're on TV and the radio for people that only do this and didn't win a national championship. So thank you so much. It's Jocks94.5 at Greg McElroy on Twitter, Mac and Cube, also the podcast. Always College Football with Greg McElroy, ESPN and Omaha Productions. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate you.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you very
much.
And
the way he was talking about the market, dude, he was throwing around market numbers. Like, you can tell he likes to get down. I like to hear that.
First of all, he's so good on ESPN. He's one of those
guys. Tremendous.
I love listening to him and watching him. He just knows what's going on. And another thing that's great is genuinely unbiased, right? Like, I mean, look, I got to throw Desmond Howard under the bus. Michigan could be playing the 85 Bears. He's like, yeah, Michigan by 75.
Did you notice, big guy, how that turned into jocking Greg McElroy and taking shots at Michigan from Amal
always,
Shaw, the Ohio
always.
State grad?
Because you mentioned Dylan Stewart, the kid who signed with South Carolina over Ohio State. I was a bit perturbed.
Five-star.
Yeah,
five-star.
Thank
you. It's a huge get for Beamer.
Big-time get.
Huge get. It's annoying how good McElroy is with the media. Ugh. Save some for us. Scott Spritzer's next.